You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 8 September. We've just had Chinese import-export data an hour ago, weaker than the previous and also weaker than expected. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Nkunzi Sanlam Private Wealth, US jobs data, OPEC production cuts and fortress results. Sean Kelly from Parity Wealth Managers, the ETF revolution keeps growing. What risks, if any, does passive face? And then Connie Blum from Mesh.Trade. They have a yielding Czar stablecoin. What is it and what's the use case? This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, dealers, customers edge closer to insight on accident-damaged vehicles. Credo Mobility offers dealers access to vehicle accident and salvage data. They have plans to widen access to the data set. Business Day, Transnet narrows loss as it revalues properties, lifts rail tonnages. State-owned logistics group to shift focus from operational recovery to transformation and growth. Morning markets, the US was mixed. We had the S&P off almost a third of a percent, NASDAQ up 0.1%, the 10-year at 4.161%. The East is green, Sydney's up a few points, 0.03%, Tokyo 1.4% higher, Hong Kong up a third of a percent, and Tencent up 0.9%. Commodities mostly red, gold is the exception, with gold futures 3,626, Brent 6,627, platinum 1,381 and palladium 1,122. The rand is 1760, Bitcoin 111,200. An opening call for the top 40, 530 points to the green, little over half a percent higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
And correction on that 10-year, 4.104. Nkunzi Sanlam Private Wealth. Job starter on Friday, highly anticipated. A lot of moving parts. Unemployment at 4.3%, ticking a little bit higher. But new jobs were 22,000, of which 31,000 in healthcare. My sense was, looking at the internets on Friday, is you could spin it any way you wanted. But the short answer is FOMC is probably going to cut next Wednesday. And that perhaps is really what matters here.
Yeah, morning, Simon. Yeah, you're totally right. I mean, any which way you look at it, it looks like a rate card. A rate cut is certainly on the cards. Also worth noting, this was the first jobs report since Mr. Trump sacked the last person in the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So, you know, all eyes on this one. It was quite a big one ahead of, obviously, as you said, the Fed are in the next couple of weeks and they are going to cut. I mean, first things worth noting, I think, amongst all the noise is the U.S. jobs market is certainly slowing. Yeah, employment is slowly creeping up, and actually that June's figure, which was revised down from a job loss to a job loss of 13,000, that was actually the first time that the U.S. economy has shed positions back since the coronavirus pandemic in 2020. So, yeah, certainly is slowing on the U.S. jobs front anyway.
And hence the power pivot from Jackson Hole of a couple of weeks ago, where he sort of said, you know, less worried about inflation, and we can debate that, but he said worried about jobs. And truthfully, I mean, he's not wrong.
Yeah. I mean, you can argue any way you want. The Fed inflation target, 2% target, I mean, it's nowhere near that. It's been stubbornly around about the 3 level for as long as I can remember. So, yeah, he's now pivoting more towards this. And I'd have to say, contrary to what you think of Mr. Trump, I do actually think the Fed are becoming a little bit late in this cutting cycle. These numbers are quite backward-looking. The last couple of months' revisions, I think he should have probably cut already, but I'm sure there's a bit of catch-up coming.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe you could do 50. Certainly 25 is point cut is absolutely based. And we had OPEC Plus over the weekend. More production cuts coming from October. In the one sense, this is weird because prices are low, but my sense is this really is Saudi Arabia gunning for market share, and we might get lower oil prices, and no one's going to complain about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's good for us, certainly in South Africa. We import all of our energy, so that is a good thing. It's a tricky one, isn't it? Because on the face of it, I mean, the world is effectively awash with oil. Mm. Why would you come and increase production even more? But it really is, as you said, it's all about the Saudis. And in fact, if you look at the other exporting countries that form OPEC Plus, they have full capacity. They can't even turn the taps on anymore. So hence the eight members lifting production by 137,000 barrels. I mean, if you think back to the end of last year, they were increasing it at 500,000. So yeah, there really is not much more to do except for the Saudis. And it's all about market share, really. It's not about the price of oil.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And to your point, we import our oil. We would like a cheaper oil. We're not going to complain when petrol goes down. A last question around Fortress. Results out late on Thursday. And they really, I mean, they had challenges with the AMB shares. They've resolved that. They're plugging along nicely. Dividend yield around 7%, still a discount to NAV. Your thoughts on Fortress, which, of course, has a big chunk of Nepi Rock Castle as well.
Yeah, I actually quite like this one. I mean, we don't follow too closely on the sort of real estate side, but out of all the real estates, I think it's operating quite a nice space. I like the exposure to Eastern Europe. I like the exposure to Poland. Poland is one of the fastest growing, I think the fastest growing economy in Europe, at close to 4%. Mm-hmm. So they're getting a nice exposure there, and Romania as well is pretty nice. So I think it's a good business, and you also being rewarded for getting in at a level where the PE is under 10, so it's not expensive. And as you said, dividend yield close to 7%. So ticks all the boxes for me. And I think they, contrary to a bit of a noise, as you said, the A's and the B's and a little bit of a soap opera back there, but they've got that out the way. And I think they're back on track. And I think it was a solid set of numbers. And if you're looking for a bit of exposure and a little bit of a rand hedge in the right part of Europe, I think this looks very interesting. And I certainly say it ticks all the boxes for me.
Yeah, agreed. It does. I mean, never going to shoot the lights out, but a nice solid REIT for a portfolio potentially. We'll leave it there. Nick Kunze, portfolio manager at Sanlam Private Wealth. Always appreciate the early morning. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for 3 decades.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Sean Kelly from Parity Wealth. Sean, appreciate the early morning time. ETFs, I mean, they've been around, I'm actually thinking they've been around since the 90s. In South Africa, they arrived in the late 2000s. So they've been around for a long, long time. And we already are seeing an evolution. And in fact, in some ways, a revolution in terms of the global ETF space. Talk us through some of the data points that have popped up recently in your radar.
Morning, Simon, and always great to be on. And yeah, I think you're absolutely right. The numbers certainly tell the story. I mean, the ETF space now manages close to $17 trillion worldwide. And in this year alone, we've already seen the US topped up by another $800 billion. Cool. And markets are on track to reach $1 trillion by the end of the year for the second year running. And it's really dominated by, of course, the big three passive names, BlackRock, Vanguard, and State Street, which control around 70% of that global ETF assets, showing just how concentrated that industry has become. And the size is not just a US story anymore. In Europe, inflows hit a record of around 39 billion euros this year, and it's expected to double by 2030. And we see those similar trends in Asia Pacific. But I think some of the crazy stats that we've seen come through is this product explosion. You know, 20 years ago, there were only around 450 ETFs. Yeah. And for the first time, there are now more listed U.S. ETFs of over 4,600 than there are U.S. listed stocks of around 4,200. And, you know, this year alone, nearly 700 new ETFs have launched. And it really, this explosion reflects both demand and competition, and shows how crowded and complex this ETF universe has become. So, you know, navigating through these thousands of ETFs has become more complex, and investors are increasingly, you know, seeking professional guidance to avoid new risks facing passive investing.
Yeah, I mean, that number is astounding. It was maybe a decade ago. I remember logging onto an offshore platform. There were 1,200 ETFs in the US, and I thought that was a lot. 4,600 is crazy. Does this create some risks? I mean, not in the sense that the industry is going to collapse, but some risks there. And you mentioned investors needing assistance. I imagine at 4,600, there must be some, I don't know, wild and woolly, and this must potentially generate some risks for the passive investing space.
Yeah, absolutely, Simon. I mean, it's a paradox of choice here. Innovation has been mismatched with excess, and thematic ETFs are multiplying often with ultra narrow or gimmicky themes like AI pet care. So confusions create a paradox of choice, and more variety can lead investors to, too much choice and can overwhelm them, which is why professional guidance has become more important. Back in 2009, the numbers show that only 41% of investors were self-invested. And now at the end of 2024, it's fallen to around 25%. But I think when the ETF space, with what's really concerning market participants, is new data shows that passive ownership is now up to 35 to 40% of US market stocks, which is nearly double our earlier estimates. And it's certainly large enough to reshape how markets function. And how that lazy capital, if you want to call it that, affects the market. When an index rebalances, passive funds must buy or sell regardless of fundamentals. And Tesla's inclusion in the S&P 500 in 2020 is a great example, where billions flowed in overnight, lifting the price purely because it was a constituent of the S&P and nothing really to do with the earnings. And I think market participants are concerned, especially looking at the concentration risk. Maybe looking at the Mag 7, which is around 35% of the S&P, NVIDIA alone at around 8%. But just on the other side, I'd like just to point out that specifically on the Mag 7 space and the AI space, if you're looking at those Mag 7, collectively they've acquired around 850 companies, and subsidiaries like YouTube, with an estimated market cap of around $550 billion, owned by Alphabet, or Instagram, owned by Meta, has a market cap around $450 billion, would each in their own right rank among the S&P 500 if it spun out. So we're probably looking at close to something to like a Mag 70 in truth. But anyway, all of this matters because passive inflows are no longer neutral. They're actively move markets, and regulators are paying closer attention, especially to liquidity
Yeah, man. And I like your point there around maybe the Magnificent Seven. I hadn't thought of that, of course. I mean, Instagram in of itself, WhatsApp, all of those. A quick last question, future of ETFs. I mean, my sense is they've got to, innovation versus excess. They've got to balance that line. At the moment, maybe they're skewing a little bit towards excess rather than proper innovation. AI pet care, I mean, that just makes no sense.
Yeah, I think there's, it's a exciting future for this the side of the market. I think tokenization is also on the horizon, which gives fractional ownership of private or real assets, and it could completely change how investors access alternative markets. But the ETF story is reinforced by performance data. Over the past 15 years, only a third of active US equity managers have beaten their benchmarks, with ETFs charging an average fee of around 0.09% versus 0.64% of active fund managers. It's perhaps no surprise that investors are defaulting to ETFs. So the challenge is clear: separate genuine innovation from noise. And it raises the big questions for investors. If most active fund managers are underperform while ETFs are getting cheaper and broader, should we still be in active management at all? Or are we moving into a world where index investing is the prevailing strategy? Our house view has and always and remains that there is room for both in your portfolio.
Yeah, I think there's always going to be room for both. I mean, if everyone just moved to passive, how would we set prices? I mean, scratch my head. I agree. A blend of always. We'll leave that there. Sean Kelly, Parity Wealth. Appreciate the early morning. Let your money weather the storms with StanLib Asset Management. Invest in the StanLib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio sub-managed by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Connie Bloom, MD of Mesh.Trade. Connie, stablecoins backed by a currency, but their popularity is absolutely surging. The Genius Act, sort of what, last month, I think it was, passed in the US. They've always been around, but they are markedly gaining popularity in the US, but also in the African continent.
Yes, absolutely. The Genius Act is a movement in the market that we've been very aware of and keeping a close eye out on. But I think a lot of the focus in the market is currently on, like, what is the US doing and what is going on that side of the pond. And yes, it's lovely that there is more clarity in the market and a lot more transparency coming to our shores. But I think something that very few people are aware of is stablecoins are growing massively in Africa. Mm. Globally, last year, the market cap of stablecoins were around $250 billion and $5.7 trillion in transactions were processed.
Wow.
And in especially in the sub-Saharan Africa community, many people think that the majority of crypto volumes are driven by Bitcoin. But in fact, crypto volumes are driven by stablecoins. 43% of stablecoin transactions actually happen in crypto volumes are happening in stablecoins. And that's fascinating to know.
With that in mind, you've now launched the YZAR, Y the letter, not the question. This is a stablecoin. It's a ZAR stablecoin. Give us the details.
I like the why and the whys are there, as you mentioned it is. And maybe I can delve into the why behind whys are to answer your question. Is at Mesh, we've always been confronted by one very simple problem statement, is the problem statement of idle money earns nothing.
Yeah.
So it's just sitting there. So every time someone funds their account or they're waiting for a transaction or they can't figure out what to invest in, they have this idle cash sitting around. And YZAR is the answer to that. So what YZAR is, it's South Africa's first yield-bearing stablecoin. It's pegged one-to-one by rand. So the effect means that if you own one YZAR, there will be one rand sitting behind it, or one rand in value, meaning your capital is guaranteed. And what we do is we calculate the yield that you accrue on this asset on a daily basis, and it settles to your account monthly. And that's currently a 5% accrual coming to your side. So it competes with your savings accounts, it competes with your fixed term savings accounts and your money market funds without actually locking up your capital. So your capital is always available. There's a near instant liquidity on it. So it gives you a means for your digital rands to move like cash, but earn like an investment.
That's an important point. It's accruing daily. It's paid monthly, but it's accruing daily, which means, I mean, I could, to your earlier point around idle money, I might have some cash for, I don't know, a week or 10 days. I can't think of a scenario, but whatever it might be. I'm going on holiday and I've drawn money. It can be very, very short term. It needn't be a long-term plan at all.
Yes, absolutely. I think we all have, on a daily basis, balances just sitting in our bank accounts, not doing anything. We know that like savings accounts and saving pockets earn less than 2% interest at this stage. So this is absolutely a competitive solution to that. And for bigger players in the financial market, so financial advisors and institutions, they have idle money also sitting there waiting to be deployed, but they cannot lock that up until that opportunity comes around. And that sometimes the opportunity is instant, where you need to step into the market. So this is something that gives them a lot more tools to react with.
I hadn't even thought of corporates. They've often got, again, large amounts for short periods. What underpins, one of the things with stable coins is that they're underpinned by something. What's the underpinning of these ZAR coins?
So both are ZAR coins. So we have a settlement coin, which is called the MZAR. Mm-hmm. And now we have the yield earning stable coin, which is the YZAR. Is they're both underpinned and backed by rands. In a very safe accounts at some of our biggest banks and also in certain of their investments. And that makes sure that from a backing perspective, that each coin is backed by one rand at all times. But we've taken this one step further because it's not just, can it be backed by a rand? Is it pegged to a rand? We also want to create a lot more security around these stable coins, because I think something that is not spoken to enough in the market is bankruptcy remoteness. I don't want you to actually be sitting with Mesh credit risk. It needs to be in structures that are bankruptcy remote from our operations. You need that guarantee as a holder of these assets that no one will get their fingers into the proverbial cookie jar.
Yeah.
And we have put this into a SPV structure, which is leading in the market currently from a bankruptcy remoteness. And very few other players are actually putting it into these kind of structures. So what that effectively means is if something goes wrong in the market, if something goes wrong in the Mesh setup, that your money will still be protected and you can still get to that capital base of yours.
And then the yield essentially comes as, I mean, you're bulking up deposits at the banks, getting the yield and passing it on to the holders of the YCoin, YZAR.
Yes, absolutely. So we've diversified into the banks. We are planning to diversify that even further into money market assets as well to provide higher yields. But for right now, 5% is very competitive and bank deposits are very good assets to put these in. But what that means for you as a holder of Wizar is you benefit from this larger interest or yield component coming towards your side. Even if you have a small balance, less than 1,000 Rand, 10,000 Rand, generally the bigger yield only comes towards your side if you have more than 1 million Rand in balance in your own account. So therefore, the community also benefits from the larger pool of the assets.
Yeah, it's scale of community in a sense. We'll leave it there. Connie Blum, MD, Mesh Trade, appreciate the time. And that's our poll today. Stablecoins. Of course, there's US stablecoins. There's all sorts of stablecoins. My question is, have you used a stablecoin? Do you see any use for it? Is it a great idea? Are you keen for it? Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. That's it for today. We were chatting with Skulk Low, PSG Old Oak on Friday. The rumor that MTN might make another bid at Telkom. MTN has said, nope, there is no talks happening. But we asked you what you thought. Pretty evenly split between only good for MTN, no Telkom doing great, and yes, it looks like an excellent deal. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nubukle, Nicole, to you for listening. My guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.